New York Real Talk with Pamela Sue Mann, Alex Lefchuk, and some incredibly inspiring guest co-presenters from the city that never sleeps via Siren Radio and Southside Broadcasting.
Wonderment of that particular day in 1967. Which day? November the 28th, 1967, the day before the Beatles' Magical Mystery Tour was released. Why is it so significant as far as New York Real Talk is concerned? Well, it's only the date of birth of our special guest today. That's the fabulous Jeff Allen. How are you, Jeff?
I'm very well. How are you?
Well, great to connect with your good self. And of course, Pamela Sue Mann is with us as well, having sorted out, thanks to wonderful number one soul, Jerry, the audio links from that point of view. Pamela, are you set and ready to go with more magic with the Juilliard-trained, awesomely talented Jeff Allen?
I yes. almost wanted to look behind me like...
Yes, we are honored to have you, Jeff.
Thank you for having me. And thank you for using the tidbit about Magical Mystery Tour being released. I learned about that recently, and I love that. I love that fact, primarily because it, as a small boy, that was one of the first recordings I owned on, I think it was cassette tape. And it became incredibly special to me as I grew older and became a bass player, and my love for the Beatles and Paul McCartney, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I mean, I've got to ask the first question then. Is it Blue Jay Way? Is it Your Mother Should Know? Is it Baby You're Rich Man? Is it Magical Mystery Tour? Is it Penny Lane? Which choice would you go from the album?
If I had to choose one, now, as an adult?
Or Strawberry Fields Forever, also a classic.
Yeah, I'd have to give that a thought. I'm really bad. I have a 12-year-old son, and he loves to ask me questions like, what's your favorite movie ever? Like, he wants to know, like, one thing, and I'm always at a loss, and he loves to mock me as a 12-year-old would.
We haven't even mentioned Hello, Goodbye, and I Am the Walrus. I mean, you know, there's so many classics.
I mean, Hello, Goodbye is a lot of fun and always was. I'd have to sit with the record before I could come up with one song.
Well, you're still earnest, Jeff. This is why
what?
We love you.
No,
you want to answer truthfully, but you know.
Yeah, I could just bullshit, but you know, that's not my thing.
You know what? I'm going to answer for you because I think that Your Mother Should Know. You know why? Because of the birth story, you know?
There you go.
You do something. And then
let's
you
go with that.
Let's all get up and dance to a song that was a hit before your mother was born. Though she was born a long, long time ago, your mother should know.
Nice choice. Now, we launched this particular program with White Light by Vienna Teng, an artist I wasn't familiar with, but again, an awesome track. Would you like to just share with us what your involvement was with Vienna Teng?
Her producer on that record was an incredibly talented gentleman named Alex Wong, who now I think he lives in Nashville. And he called me. I don't know how he got to me. We had a lot of people in common at the time, and he was living in Brooklyn and had a studio. He called me, and I just went out there, and we spent maybe 3 days out there. And then I remember, I think I flew out to the West Coast and did another handful of songs in Orange County, Encinitas maybe, or one of those towns where we finished the record. But it was a really fun project. Alex is a really sweet guy and incredibly talented musician. He's a songwriter himself. He's also, I think he's a chef. He started in Nashville. He started doing dinners for like his crew of people, creative people, and blending some of those disciplines together.
Wow.
I forget what he called it. He had a name for it. But so I really liked him and Vienna. They were lovely people. And it was just, it was a memorable session just because it was so much fun. How freely the flow of ideas, like you know, if he wanted me to try something, just our communication and their willingness to let me do things. Sometimes that back and forth can vary. You know, and I'm good with all of it. Like if somebody just has a part written out or is a very specifically knows what they want, I'm happy to do that. If somebody just wants me to come up 100% with a vibe from the bottom on the bass, you know, I'm happy to do that. But I just remember really Alex and I hitting it off and Vienna and just being a very free flow back and forth wise. So I enjoyed that record, and there's a bunch of good tracks on that record. I think she's a great singer and a great piano player and writer. So,
well, you've certainly come up with a range of other musical choices, which we'll allude to as the program proceeds. But there's an old saying that when the pupil is ready, the teacher will arrive. And I suppose that could be said about your early classical string bass tutors at Juilliard, Homer Mensch and Eugene Levinson. Yes. And you've actually benefited hugely, I think, from a whole range of elements within that. Was that always a conscious decision to effectively gravitate towards great so that you'd become great yourself?
That's a big topic and a big question. I mean, super zoomed out, I'd say I have learned that like playing, whether it's sports or music or learning, when you hang out with people who are better than you or know more than you, it benefits you. And that takes some people, that can be challenging depending on certain aspects of ego or personality. But it's definitely a lesson that I've learned and I try to share with, I have a handful of students sometimes, or my son, or so, but it was somewhat accidental, although it might have come from my parents, you know, just appreciation for education, broadly speaking. Going back to, I played the clarinet when I was in second grade. And that was like I was in a public school in suburban New Jersey, and they offered a couple of instruments. And
you were the Lisa Simpson of New Jersey, but a different gender.
Starts with clarinet, doesn't it, Jeff? I think some of the best people once played clarinet or still do.
It's great. I would love to play again. You know, I haven't. You know, I gave up on it in seventh or eighth grade when I started playing bass guitar. But going back to, you know, education and being around great people, quite happenstance-wise, if that's even
whatever. It's a word.
Yes, now it is. There was an elder gentleman who lived literally across the street from my house, who was a reed teacher. He used to have guys come to his house. And for me at the time in the 70s, I just saw these long-haired hippie guys parking in front of his house and going in. So my dad went over and asked him if he would give me a couple of like lessons. And this was at the beginning. I'm just learning how to play. So I did, and I subsequently learned that he is like one of the, if not the most preeminent single reed pedagogues of that time. His name was Joe Allard. If you speak to professional reed players, they all revere him. I think he taught at New England Conservatory, Manhattan School of Music. He played, I think, bass, clarinet, and saxophone in the NBC Symphony under Toscanini. And it was like, so I learned this afterwards, and this is one of my party tricks. Whenever I meet, if I'm around reed players, I can tell them my Joe Allard story, because they're always just like, their minds are blown because he's that kind of figure. I think he taught maybe Michael Brecker, certainly Bob Berg, and a lot of the greats of that generation would flock to study with him. So anyhow, it's a bit of an aside, but yes. So starting there, and then, yeah, teachers are really important. I don't know how else to,
well, as, again,
go
as
on
you said,
hours about that.
Always raising the bar, always actually, as tennis players would actually say, and tennis coaches, you improve your game if you play better players, which is one of the reasons why Pamela Suman constantly is raising the bar when it comes to guests like yourself on New York Real Talk. Pamela, over to you.
Thank you.
I don't know a thing. I see someone who's got something going on, and I stand there and I hope that some of it kind of rubs off, you know. So far, all these years of living with Jerry Leonard, the only thing that's rubbed off is some of the words that I say that my daughter says, "Mom, you're American. You're not supposed to say it that way."
Yeah.
And the number three. You know, I was just thinking of how we met.
I love this. Yeah.
But I don't think I should tell my version of the story. I think you should tell your version of the story.
Well, you know,
I'm being piggish right now, because before I ask you that question to answer, mm-hmm. I first want to say that Jeff is, he's like one of the top three preeminent, if that's a word, musicians that I know who is such a world-class player. And in that Leonard Cohen way, it's not just a badge he wears. He works. He's a working man. And he, from way before I even met him, his work ethic is amazing. And because of that and his natural talent, he's a phenomenal musician. And he's not going to tell you that, but he can play so many different types of music. He's always got this even temperament. He always takes it as an artist when an artist comes to him with something. And I know this from my experience, because I've been on the side of that once or twice, the artist side. It's not, he doesn't get egoistic about it. He takes the information in. He takes the vibe of what the directive is, and he brings all that he has to it, which is immense. And then he's just chill, and he delivers a world-class performance. So
well,
I have to say,
Jeff,
that
you've got the job.
Thank
clearly,
you,
you know, that's
like
stun and dusted
right there.
Okay, so now the silly story.
No, I appreciate everything that you said, and just to share where my mind was going, hearing that. In the last a couple of years, sometimes people call me up to take lessons and they want to learn things. And I'm not like a teacher. I don't have like I don't teach a lot. So, but it ends up being like me sitting there talking.
Jedi master to the students, Padawan.
I guess if we want to use that metaphor, yes. It's caused me to think about what I do and how I do it and why, and like, and that's what I was thinking when you were saying some of those lovely things, Pam. So it's given me an opportunity to give some thought to a lot of those things. I'm not going anywhere with this.
So how did you meet Pamela, Jeff? That's what we need to know.
Well, okay.
How did you meet her?
Well, this goes back to the Joe Allard Downey Drive clarinet, because my next door neighbor, I lived on a street where there were many families that all had kids. I have a brother and a sister, relatively close in age. the street was filled with families with kids, and we all used to play in the street, run around. This is before everybody was so fearful, and they just let their kids run free range, right?
So surely that's the New Jersey way. I mean, that's why Born to Run
was back then. Now everybody's so scared.
They've got leashes for their kids.
Yeah. So anyhow, but in the house directly to the east of my house, like the next house over, was a family, and they had three girls who we all played together. We knew growing up all through high school. Anyhow, my mom, I must have been in my 20s, was like, oh, I ran into Pamela somewhere. And so long story short, the girl who I grew up next to was dating a woman who was a musician, who was a singer-songwriter. And that came to me through my mother, because she ran into Pamela. And it was, that was my connection to Gina, who I then, did I meet you on that gig, or did I meet you before that? I think
I think you met me at MTV on that day, that hysterical day. Or did we rehearse?
I think we must have rehearsed at her. She had that townhouse in the Muse there.
Oh, right.
Might have met there.
Yeah.
So suffice to say, that was the connection. Pamela, her girlfriend Gina. Gina was working. I don't know how she got the gig, but like there was a dance act called Real McCoy. They had a huge hit. And they put together a band of musicians to back them up, faking it, you know, just miming on MTV.
It's what Milli Vanilli did. So why shouldn't the Real McCoy?
They got real talented musicians.
True.
Some of them.
It's like the Archies.
Who could actually do it. And yeah. I remember looking at Jeff, because Jeff, again, I've just told you all about Jeff. And I think I was at the MTV gig, I was looking around going, they're not plugging in our instruments. Like my muso friends from music school are going to watch this and see that my keyboard is not plugged in. Right. Something like this. And I can't remember what you said. You said something so brilliant and you smiled. You said it in one breath and you smiled. And I was like, oh my God, it's all these years at Juilliard. And that's great. The money gig is going to be on TV where you don't have to plug in.
You don't have to play.
You know, you can do it. Maybe that's it. You know, you can do it. You're exuding that confidence of being able to do it.
Yeah.
Yet, it's a paycheck.
It was a standard practice. Top of the Pops in Britain. Every system was mimes. The artist used to mime to the soundtrack. So the challenge of television in many ways. Somebody who never mimes, of course, brings us around to our next piece of music, Sandcastles by Donna Lewis. Donna Lewis, of course, mutual friend, Pamela, big friend of Donna, of course. Any thoughts or any reasons, Jeff, why you went for Sandcastles with Donna Lewis as your next choice?
Well, making that whole record was really a blast. I mean, I always love working with Jerry, and we go back a long way. He produced that record with Donna. And that song, I just love the sort of the spell that it casts vibe-wise. Yeah. And I like it just because it was largely based on the demo of the Rhodes. I think it was a Rhodes and vocal demo that it ends up, in my mind, at least as the bass player, it's almost like a duet between the bass thing and the voice in the chorus. And it's super spacious. It appeals to a lot of things that that appeal to me. So I really like that track. I like the sound, selfishly, the bass sound and the whole recording. The vibe of that piece is really substantial. So I love that. I love that one. That's why I included that. Yeah.
I need to say what's on my mind. I need to know peace of mind. I need to feel stop the rollercoaster dread. A moment lived, a moment left. I say it again, it's easy. There are lands between us, golden banners streaming. Do you want to see me weak? Do you want to see me broken? Do you want to let me go? Inside the walls, I call out loud at heaven's door. The scream machine out in the cold, but the herbs of warmth defeat the foe. Among the Jews, among the kings, you know what I mean. It's easy. There are lands between us, golden banners streaming. Do you want to see me weak? Do you want to see me broken?
You're listening to New York Real Talk with Pamela Suman and, of course, our special guest, Jeff Allen. Jeff, early on, you were influenced by Gene Simmons, Michael Anthony, Geddy Lee, Steve Harris and Chris Squire. Now it's more likely to be Marcus Miller, Will Lee, Anthony Jackson, Paul McCartney, Pino Palladino, Edgar Meyer, Edgar Gomez. I mean, is it a case that musicians operate on that symbiotic approach that actually, you know, everybody has a different riff and that ultimately you could argue that jazz is one of the purest ways in which people can actually influence each other in terms of the performance?
You know, you touched upon a lot of things there. I mean, influences and inspiration, I think it can come from a lot of places. When you're young and you're learning technically to play your instrument, I think it's perfectly normal and advisable to sort of try to key into, like, you hear that and you're like, I like that. I want to do that. How do I do that? And that then gets your brain going to figure out how to do that. And, you know, and it goes beyond that. I mean, nowadays, I'm sometimes influenced by players, but it's more, it doesn't have to be like bass players, although when I hear something that catches my ear, certainly. And in today's world with you know, a lot of younger musicians who just, they post videos constantly on Instagram or whatever platform.
TikTok. Instagram, TikTok. So last year.
Yeah, I'm so old. But so...
if we bring out cassette tapes next.
Some people do that now.
Yeah, I just ordered a James Blake cassette. Are you kidding?
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so we had to get a cassette recorder in order to play it because we didn't have any...
I blame Guardians of the Galaxy for this resurgence of the cassette tape.
It's not a great medium, so I think it's funny.
You'll be taking a pencil to actually wrap it around when it gets twisted around as well these days.
So inspiration and influence, you know, it can happen. There you go. Nice. I love the color. How'd you find that?
Pamela demonstrating her very own aquamarine colored cassette player.
Records as well. Oh, online.
Yeah. You know, so I certainly the bass players that you listed, you know, were really big in my development and figuring out, you know, my own sense of taste through them, you know, which is, that's the process that's supposed to happen. You know, you're supposed to copy until you hopefully develop some sort of vocabulary of your own. Which I'm still working on, honestly. The bass is a funny thing because it's very functional in nature and very, on one level, incredibly simple, or should be relatively simple, but it doesn't end there. And but my point is that, like, in terms of developing your own vocabulary and having your own voice on the instrument, it's a pretty subtle affair that a lot of people, lay people, wouldn't pick up necessarily on those subtleties. And I'm cool with that. And I think that's part of the kind of personality of somebody who wants to be a bass player. I'm not like in the front of the stage, you know, making very obvious statements about, you know, because the bass doesn't generally do that. So that's that idea alone, you know, we could talk about for an hour.
Wow. Many students who study music at the University of Lincoln do tune into these New York Real Talk podcasts and programs on Siren Radio. And one of the most profound quotes I think you gave, Jeff, in response to a question about advice for students was, have other skills you can use to make money in addition to pursuing music, or at the very least, develop multiple skills within music to increase your potential earning capability. Is that something which, certainly as we are battling through artificial intelligence, ChatGPTs, all those other things, it's even more important to have a smorgasbord of skills that effectively you can draw on, as you have yourself in many ways, because of the longevity of your career?
Yeah, that also, you touched upon a lot of things there. Yes, even before the current moment that we're staring down right now, I've been doing this for a long enough period of time where I've seen some pretty significant changes to the work that's available and the income streams that are available for a freelance musician, for a session bass player. I've been incredibly lucky to be able to swim my way through that and be able
it's
to
continue. Skill, Jeff, skill and talent.
Some of it is that, maybe, but all some of it is luck. Some of it is, I don't know. But, you know, for me, over the last, like, let's say 10 or 15 years, not out of any grand design, I started getting opportunities playing more in Broadway, like musical theater pieces. And that happened quite by accident, but these opportunities just would come my way. I would say yes. I'm always game for a challenge. So that aspect has been a big part of my career over the last 10, 15 years. And increasingly so. And I'm really grateful for that, as other aspects of work that I used to do changed, or there was less of it, or I just got called for less of it, whatever So that's one thing. But going back to your quote, I guess a quote of me. Being able to do a lot of things is smart. Like I don't advise younger players to approach a career the way I did in the 90s, where there was enough opportunity and enough work just being a bass player. I think that's more challenging now. So you certainly being able to record and know some audio skills in terms of Pro Tools, in terms of arranging, maybe it can be anything. You can become have copying skills as a copyist. You can learn to produce and or write songs or write tracks for libraries or not library houses that license music sort of royalty free. Or there's a whole bunch of things that are music related. Or I know people who have gone into like music management or arts management or administration. There are a lot of tangential things related to music. And I'm not, everybody has to find that path.
Dealing not just with the winds of change, but the winds that blow, which brings us neatly around to Duncan Shake and another choice of music. That. See what we did there.
Yes, that was very good. Thank you for that.
All the shadows blue in the winter moon, the stars within the darkness, they remember you. And they sorrow too with all the winds that blow. Every book you'd read in the evening breeze, stars shone in the darkness. Still it awaits to see, will ya turn its leaves with all the winds that blow. See the window too, that once you look through, out on the stars, the darkness, it remembers you in this empty room with all the wind so cold. And that phantom moon is a window too. The stars look through the darkness to some summer noon where our ghosts still move among the winds that blow. You were my soul and my silence. You were my hope, my lightness. You were the sword at my side through all the winds that blow. Now the children play through these shorter days till stars show through the darkness. Now the young men stray. Nobody waits among the winds that blow. All the shadows blue in the winter moon. Stars within the darkness, they'll remember you. They will sorrow too, and all the winds will blow. All the winds will blow.
Yeah, I love that track. That record also, I have great memories, which Jerry and I did with Duncan and the great Matt Johnson on drums. It was Duncan's nod or tip of the hat to his big influence, Nick Drake. And we did it all acoustically. I played upright bass on it, and it was almost all acoustic instruments. And it was so much fun to make. The great Kevin Killen, I think, was engineering that. And that track, it's one of my favorite tracks on that record, which is why I included that. And from a bass playing standpoint, I like what I did. So
the New York Real Talk focuses on you today, Jeff Allen, and rightly so. I get it. Although I'm not sure how Pamela's question about wacky New York moments is going to relate to a lad from New Jersey. Anyway, Pamela, time to ask it.
Yes.
Oh, I thought you might have forgotten. I'm sorry. I'll take this lozenge out of my mouth and proceed to ask.
It's always good to have a New Yorker, a New York-based soul from Massachusetts with a lozenge midway through the interview. It's good. It works through that. Anyway, I've filled enough, Pamela. Over to you.
We're so professional. We're so very professional. Well, I almost feel really embarrassed to ask Jeff this question because I think we would have to have you on thousands of times.
Presumably he signed a long-term contract, Pamela. Have you not actually read that?
My people.
So let's just say that New York is some kind of energetic, strange place. Okay, not very eloquently put, but you get what I'm saying.
I do.
That even for the quote-unquote world-weary New Yorker, or someone who has been here or certainly driven here or, you know, performed here, recorded here, done major time here, and there's still moments where on the island of Manhattan, you shake your head and go, this could only happen in Manhattan. This could only happen in New York City. This is really bizarre. Did I really see that? You know, or experience that. So do you have one of these moments that just comes to mind, just one moment that comes to mind top of your head that was just truly bizarre, even for New York standards, but it could have only really happened in New York, like a wacky New York moment?
It's going back to what I said earlier about my son always asking me for my
one thing. See, I didn't think
this thing. I mean, there are so many, and they almost happen, you know, daily or weekly.
Yeah.
And also the playing field continues to change, right? I mean, since COVID, post COVID, I work a lot in Midtown and Times Square with a lot of the theater work, and that neighborhood is. The feel on the street is closer to what it felt like, not in the 80s before it got cleaned up, but maybe like in the 90s when the cleanup was just starting. But there's a lot more mentally ill people on the streets and a lot more homelessness and all the stuff that goes along with that. Like certain side streets, like just smell like a toilet, which for many years in New York, you didn't get as much of that. So not to harp on bodily functions, but it's just constantly changing. You know, I've lived here a long time. And to your point, Alex, I consider myself a New Yorker now because I've lived here longer than I lived in New Jersey. Maybe that's just to make myself feel better. But my parents are from New York. My mom grew up, was born in Brooklyn, and my dad was from the Bronx.
You don't have to excuse the whole process. It's par for the course, you know. And as we said earlier, your mother should know. That's a classic line.
It is. So good. So good.
So I take it you're kind of being a little bit evasive on this on the basis that it depends which day of the week you actually go for.
Yeah,
the moment.
Some things, the first thing that came to my mind was when Pam was asking me this, is a little bit off color that I wouldn't necessarily want to relate.
Indeed.
Here.
I could appreciate.
No, I mean, this goes back into the 80s when I first moved to the Upper West Side. It's the Upper West Side is now, you know, very fancy. It's very expensive to live up there. And I lived when I went to Juilliard didn't have any housing at that time. They've since built a dorm. I don't know what percentage.
Musicians don't need housing. You just use a cardboard box, surely.
So, you know, it used to be they had a handful of rooms at the Y right near Juilliard, but I didn't live there. So my parents and I set out to find me a place to live. And there were these like residential hotels on the Upper West Side, which there are very few of them left, but there are a couple. So I lived in this building as I was 17 years old, living on my own, and which, you know, having a child now, I have a very different view of. I thought that I was incredibly worldly, which maybe I was for a 17-year-old, because I used to come into New York a lot on my own since I was maybe 13, taking lessons.
You probably watched Kojak on the television. You thought, what the hey, it's all working together.
Yeah, I certainly saw some of that. But I had spent a lot of time running around New York since I was in high school. I had a good friend of mine moved in. So I felt worldly as a 17-year-old might feel. But there were some funny things that happened living. I lived in this, now it's quote unquote luxury apartments, but it was a residential hotel called the Greystone on 91st and Broadway. And there was, and my one of my closest friends to date was my roommate for 1 year. And I remember he and I were walking back one evening to the Greystone, and they used to have street prostitutes on the Upper West Side, right? So here I am as a 17-year-old, and, you know, there were a couple of instances where some of these street prostitutes would say,
if it funny. Helps, when I was 19, I had a lady of the night who said, when I was in Leicester Square, are you looking for business, love? I said, no, I'm looking for Piccadilly Circus. There we are. It happens. That was a London scenario.
So that was where my mind went when you first said.
Exactly. We have reached the stage, Pamela. Astonishingly, time has just compressed in on itself, where we need to ask Jeff Allen those last two questions before we wrap up with In This Life and the fabulous Chantal
Krabiazuk. Yes.
Oh, you know, well, I actually want to ask the second question because it's not fair. That's all I have to say is it's not fair, Alex. This is just a one-part thing. It's not fair. So I'm going to be the true anarchist that I really am.
Great.
Yeah, and I'm going to ask the second question first, which is, sorry, Alex. Will you come back again and speak more about this? And I really want to hear more of the story. It's not finished yet. I have a feeling. The second question.
It needs to be PG rated, Pamela.
The second question is, will you come back soon? But the first question is, have you had fun with us in this kind of laid back, non-professional, professional chat?
Raising the bar of the chat show.
Yes, I've had a blast. And look, from ego perspective, getting an opportunity to sit here and talk about me is really wonderful. I don't do that often, believe it or not. So that is fun. It's great to meet you, Alex, and see you, Pam, because that doesn't happen often enough.
No,
so, yes. I would love to do it. I'd love to come back, do this, or just get together in person and continue it, or whatever. I'm game.
I take that as a yes. So, Pamela, New York, it's home to what?
Okay, Jeff, you have to tell me after this if you got it or not. Okay. New York is home to the world's finest pickle.
Let me show you what I'm made of. Good intentions are not enough to get me through today and this life. You're in the basement watching the TV. You can.
Show you.